At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers. This is InvestTalk, independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Thursday, April 4th, 2024 edition. I'm Justin Klein, and I'm joined almost as always with Luke Guerrero. And I know, Luke, you are excited about the final four matchups in the Invest Talk Market Madness tomorrow, right?
I am, but you know what makes me more excited? You know what Thursday means?
Tomorrow is Friday.
Tomorrow's Friday.
Okay. And the fireworks and markets today makes tomorrow's market even more interesting, as well as the jobs data that comes out tomorrow. So that's kind of the near term what's happening. But what's most important on this show is the long term, about your financial future and your investment portfolios and your education about what makes sense for you and your situation, your long-term goals, and how today's market applies to those ends. So we are here to answer your finance and investment questions, give you as much data and perspective as we can, developed with over 20 plus years of investment experience. And if of course, your calls are welcome. 888-99-CHART is the number. Now, before we get any further, let's talk about the Elite Eight. That was today, and we have champions of each region. And
we have the Final Four.
We have the Final Four. The new economy champion, Cytokinetics. Cytokinetics, biotech name. And then our favorite, Core and Main, the champion of the old economy, just relative strength 97, okay? So that continues its strong momentum. Cytokinetics, even though it's been in a general pullback over the past couple of months, it's emerged out of the new economy region. I think a lot of that has to do with the other names not doing so hot. Cytokinetics kind of hanging in there. EQH, which is Equitable Holdings, that is a mid-cap in the consumer region. That was the champion there. And then the final matchup was the income region, AES, which is a utility company, and AES will match up tomorrow against Equitable and Core and Main against Cytokinetics, and we'll do some previews later in the show. Now, I assure you, to ensure you're in the loop, make sure you download each podcast every day and get the daily results. Now, Luke, before we head over to talk about the market as well as run down the show topics, we're going to hit our first caller question now.
Hey, this is Andy from Atlanta. I was trying to call you guys about ticker symbol NI. That's NiSource Incorporated. I just wanted to see if you could check the fundamentals on this one. I've been holding it for a while. It's kind of been just left to right, and wanted to know what your analysis is. Big fan of the show, and I'll listen for your answer. Thank you.
Are you looking at NiSource? This is mid-cap. Let's call it a utility company, $12 billion market cap. They operate in Ohio, Pennsylvania, Virginia, Kentucky, Maryland, and Massachusetts. About a 4% dividend yield here. It's just been kind of going sideways. Relative strength 41, not terrible, not amazing. You know, one thing everyone has to understand about utilities is that there's not a giant difference between most of them. You know, there's some outliers, ones that maybe poorly run or run into some major problems. Think of, I think, here in California with Edison, right, and the fires. But in general, most of these utilities, they perform very similarly because they're bond proxies and, you know, there's small differences in their overall growth. But, Luke, what are you seeing on NiSource's valuation compared to itself historically in the industry?
Well, you know, in terms of its valuation, it's about at its 5-year average. It's trading at 1.6 price to book. Price to forward-looking earnings is a 15. Again, it's difficult to do relative valuation on these utilities like we talked about yesterday just because of the model of the business. Also want to, I believe it was Pacific Gas and Electric who had those fires. I think it was
you're
PG&E.
Right.
I don't want to besmirch my local Southern California Edison out here in case we have any listeners there.
You're correct. I misspoke.
But yeah, you nailed it. I think utilities generally, like I said yesterday, I don't get very excited about. I think it's interesting to note on a day like today in terms of market performance, when AES, for example, was up 1.2%, this name was actually down 62 basis points. People tend to fly to utilities, which are bond proxy, income proxies in terms of market stress. So that's an interesting thing to note. So, you know, generally, like you said, there aren't many differences between them. They've been paying a consistent dividend yield over the past 5 years at right around 3.3%. But I would question just how it's performed relative to other utilities, especially on a day like today, before I would throw some money at it.
Yeah, it's a fine utility. There's nothing wrong with it. Interesting enough, the relative strength of the utility sector is 41, exact dead even with what NiSource is. So it's just performing like the overall industry. It's fine. Like we said yesterday, you're not going to get excited about pretty much any utility out there. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 40 minutes or so. And our main focus point is about a new survey. And it's not just surveying U.S. citizens. They also surveyed those from around the world, 500 from each country, from about 8 or 9 different countries. So we're going to look at the statistics there and how U.S. citizens match up against their foreign counterparts. We also have some other topics on the docket. One is in regards to oil refining capacity. A new report by Wood Mackenzie, which is a consultancy agency around the energy economy, and it's talking about the potential for certain refineries around the world shutting down. And why is that? And we're going to talk about that. Also, if we have time, private equity or those that own private equity are starting to unload at a discount. And they went into it thinking one thing, that they're getting one thing, and they many times got another. And so we'll look at that as well. So those are the topics on the docket for us, as well as your voice bank questions. One is on BioNTech and Blue Owl Capital Corp, which we'll get to those calls later. And most importantly, your finance and investment questions at 888-99-CHART. Now we're going into a short break. On the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity. Please remember that you can call anytime. Leave your question on the InvestTalk voice bank. But if you're listening via our live stream on our website, investtalk.com, or on AM 1220 radio in the Silicon Valley area, you can call right now at 888-99-CHART.
When listener questions are played on the InvestTalk podcast,
how do you guys determine a value stock?
The caller voices are amplified many thousands of times.
Just wanted to get your opinion on JP Morgan and BAC.
How do you see this looking forward?
I'm 25 years old and have a question about retirement funds.
And the unbiased answers from Justin Klein.
That's why it's trading so cheap, because there's a lot of regulatory risk here.
And Steve Peasley.
I kind of like it here. If I was going to buy Tyson Food, this is where I'd buy it.
Benefit the entire InvestTalk community.
Thank you for what you guys do.
That's why 24/7, rain or shine, no matter how simple or how complex, your questions make a difference.
Symbol BKE, what's your outlook?
And InvestTalk is made better by the power of you. So don't forget to call 888-99-CHART. InvestTalk is here to help. And when you download the free InvestTalk podcasts, don't forget to rate and review. The phone lines are open, 888-99-CHART.
Now, Luke, let's take a look at the market today. Throughout the morning, everything seemed fine, but some comments by some Fed officials, I believe it was Kashgari, basically hinted at potential for zero rate cuts by the end of the year. And that was the catalyst for a market sell-off that in a market that was, you know, we've been talking about being overbought. And, you know, when you're that overbought, there's always it's easier to trigger a market sell-off. And that's what we got. We closed at the lowest level really since about March 19th, not that long ago, but certainly was a big, wide-ranging, from a technical perspective, reversal bar on volume. And this looks to be the start of at least a reasonable pullback in markets, 5, 7%. We're already probably down 2% from the highs. So probably some more downside in the near term. But very interesting day. What was your take as we closed on the lows?
Yeah, I don't know if I necessarily agree the driver of the turnaround. It certainly was a whipsaw. It was up for most of the day and then quickly dropped. I noticed that while it dropped was about the same time that crude oil spiked, finished the day up 1.4%. So you know, a lot of people are also attributing this to the potential and rise in tensions in the Mideast. There was a report earlier in the day that the U.S. was letting Israel know that within the next 48 hours, they expected an Iranian response on Israeli soil. So I think maybe as that took a little more steam throughout the day, like I said, oil swinging up at the same time that the market decided to dip, I think that probably had a hand in it as well. There were a couple other Fed officials who also spoke and said that, you know, things were staying the course. You know, Harker said inflation was still too high. Barkin noted that the data has been less encouraging, but they still seem to be on course. Goolsbee said disinflation's trend remains similar. So I think there was a lot of things out there that could have caused this. Only time will tell with the jobs report tomorrow and with some more Fed speak and Powell, I think, speaking next week as well, what the course of the Fed's path will be. But certainly some more hawkish language today that was a little bit unexpected.
Yeah, there's always multiple headlines that could be the catalyst. Lockheed Martin up today. So, you know, you're seeing money flow in the defense contracts. Like you said, oil prices up. So, yeah, that definitely could be. And that could also, if you see oil prices surge, that would give credence to the other side, which is, hey, inflation's resurging and the Fed won't cut by the year end as well. And you also have to remember, too, from a liquidity standpoint, we're entering a time where people are doing their taxes. They might need some cash, selling some securities and sending that out of the financial system and to the government coffers. That takes money out of from the liquidity situation. So that's another factor that most people don't think about. I'm not going to hit the headlines, but we're certainly in that final couple of weeks here until tax day. So a lot of factors that could spark a market sell-off, but whatever the factor was, we got one, and it certainly looks like we're ready for at least a modest pullback in markets. Like I said, 5-7%. I think that would be, frankly, healthy. It's not a healthy market when you go up, you know, kind of consistently holding the 20-day moving average for multiple months now, and you kind of need a refresher, so you get a few people scared, and I think this is probably a healthy thing over the next couple of months to have a market shake out, pull back, but probably most likely a buying opportunity in an election year where typically markets go up, right?
Yeah, no, typically it does. And, you know, if you're a long-term investor, any dip is really a buying opportunity.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's keep things moving and pivot to another InvestTalk listener. This one came in earlier at 888-99-CHART.
Hey, can I have your opinion on buying this ETF for a long-term investment, FIW, FIW. Thank you so much. Bye.
FIW. I've got a lot of questions on this one lately. This is the First Trust Water ETF, and it corresponds to the ISE Clean Edge Water Index. Clean Edge Water Index had a reversal today, like a lot of the markets. What are you seeing, Luke, on your side for this particular ETF?
Yeah, well, it's split pretty evenly between large and mid caps. It's about 41% in large caps, 49% in mid caps. The top 10 names make up about 40% of the fund, and it only holds about 30 names. It's relatively cheap, I guess, for a pretty concentrated ETF that is certainly active. It's 53 basis points. But the fact that it's in primarily U.S. large and mid caps tells me that that's kind of expensive for me. It only holds 37 names. You might be able to mimic this, cheaper. It's not one of those broadly diversified 100,000 name ETFs that gives you asset class exposure.
Yeah.
From a performance standpoint, It's been pretty decent over the past, you know, 3 year or 3 months. It's been up 10%. Year to date, it's up 6%, which for a specific ETF of this nature might be pretty good. But, you know, overall, I think for me, because of how few names it holds and how simple the strategy seems to be, it seems a little expensive.
Yeah, I agree. 53 basis points is kind of a lot for a niche ETF like this. And like you said, 53, 54% of the portfolio is in utilities. Sorry, not utilities, industrials. That's, and I like that part of the market. I like that part. And so I rather just own utilities. You can buy the XLI. That has an expense ratio of 9 basis points. So I think that's a much better way to go. You're going to get some of that water exposure in there, along with a lot of other parts of the industrial space that's doing very well right now, and it has much better relative strength. So I would go with XLI over FIW. Now we're moving into a break. Give us a call at 888-99-CHART.
Let's take a quick look at your financial to-do list. At the top, make that phone call to the InvestTalk Anytime listener line, 888-99-CHART.
Now, our main focus point is a survey by CNBC's International Your Money Financial Security Survey. And it was polled 500 people in about 9 countries. And we'll first start off with the results from the U.S. About half, a little over half, say they're behind schedule in their retirement planning. And what's interesting here, Luke, is only 54% of Americans had a retirement account as of 2022. And the typical balance, the average balance, $87,000. That's the median value. Okay. So not the average, but the median is $87,000. And what's even most concerning, and this is according to the Vanguard Group, those between the ages of 55 and 64, what we would consider pre-retirees, the median is only $71,000 in their 401k plans. Now, they might have IRAs and things like that, but that's not a whole lot. So what do you glean from this survey besides those raw numbers?
Well, it's certainly a little distressing, I think, for a lot of Americans who are approaching retirement and have found that they haven't been able to, haven't had access to, or just given their cost of living, haven't had the opportunity, or some irresponsibly not saving at all for retirement. I also think it hints to the bigger problem here, which is a lot of people in this country solely rely on Social Security, which is something that, you know, I don't think is in as dire straits as some people lead you to believe politically, but certainly it isn't something that you should wholly rely on.
Yeah, I think 3 in 4 expect to rely on government support in retirement.
Yeah, I think it also brings about the question, or rather the other issue, which is not everybody has, you know, the great access to 401ks, right? The lack of standardization through private market plans means that not all 401k plans are created equally. We see it all the time.
Yeah. And some great ones, some terrible ones.
Exactly. And I think this is certainly a big issue that affects a lot of people, not just because it affects the individual, but down the road, it affects the public through public spending and something that needs to be addressed.
Yeah. And especially if you look at it compared to other countries. So the 8 other countries they looked at were Australia, France, Germany, Mexico, Singapore, Spain, Switzerland, and the UK. And the best country out of those, France. 74% of respondents felt confident in their retirement plan. 70% in Singapore. Look at this, 65% in Mexico. 65%. So we're trailing behind Mexico. Switzerland's at 59, 58 for Spain, 56 in the UK, 51% in Germany, and 50% in Australia, all higher than the 47% here in the U.S.
You know what a lot of these have in common, though?
What?
Public health insurance. One of the largest costs for individuals is healthcare. Especially as you grow older, you're spending more and more on healthcare. So, you know, this could hint towards people feeling as though they're not secure in their retirement, or it could just be insecurity related to the rising cost of healthcare, which is one of the largest contributions to inflation.
Well, and the fact that about half of workers don't have access to a 401k plan. And we know that pensions are no longer standard anymore, and it's moved to a defined benefit program like 401ks, 403bs, et cetera. And that is everyone's best saving mechanism because it's so consistent And a lot of people don't look at it. They don't think about it. They just continually save. It never hits their pocketbook. And in the long run, that is the best savings mechanism for the average worker. So that's why several states have launched the auto IRA program. If you don't have a 401k plan, you basically are forced to set up IRAs for your employees. So I think that's a step in the right direction, but certainly doesn't solve this gap in retirement preparedness. All right, let's pivot over to a question that came from our YouTube channel. I hope you know by now we are doing every show on YouTube. We're recording it, we're posting it a couple hours after each show, so you'll be able to see all the videos and you'll be able to see all the charts and things that we're looking at. And this question came from Ulam Spiral and says, I have lived in Australia for a number of years, still have some stocks there. Do you have any insights on Australian stocks, Australian dollar, that's nearing a 20-year low? I believe I'm thinking about closing these positions and transferring money to the U.S., but it doesn't seem like the good time to do it. Now, Luke, when it comes to currencies, a lot that impacts the movement of currencies, everyone talks about the interest rates, prevailing interest rates in those countries, and that certainly is a factor, but also the strength of the overall economy. And Australia is heavily reliant on commodities. And for many years, they were heavily reliant on the Chinese economy, exporting raw materials to China to be used in manufacturing, building, et cetera. And now the Chinese economy is not doing so hot. So that certainly is an issue. But now you're starting to see resource prices go up. And that's definitely good for Australia. So I'm inclined to think there's actually more upside for the Australian dollar in the short to medium term. What are your thoughts?
No, I do agree. And I think this is typically the time when people feel desperation to get out of investments where they've been down, right? Mm-hmm. But we're talking about a macro picture here that affects the Aussie dollar, that affects the Aussie economy, and therefore Aussie stocks. And given what their economy is primarily driven by, now might be a time that you actually want to be in.
Yeah. Yeah. The Australian dollar actually bottomed last October. And it's actually making a series of higher lows, higher highs, not a strong uptrend, but definitely now neutral instead of a downtrend that it had been since early 2021. So I don't think it's a great time to be unloading your Australian stocks or your Australian dollar. Thanks for the call. On the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this topic, the five steps for spring cleaning your investment portfolio. That topic for tomorrow, but for now, I'm Justin Klein with Luke Guerrero, and we are ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART. At this point, I think almost everyone has heard how generative AI promises to bring us to the next industrial revolution. AI is already shaping society with an impact on daily life that echoes the transformative significance of electricity or the internet. As we take steps to embrace the potential of generative AI, we need to remain vigilant with regard to its exploitability. This is where HackerOne comes in. HackerOne's AI Red Team addresses the novel challenges of AI safety and security for businesses that are launching new AI deployments. The HackerOne approach involves targeted offensive testing by harnessing the collective skills of ethical hackers who are proficient in AI and prompt hacking. In short, AI red teaming is the practice of stress testing AI models and deployments to make sure they can't be tricked into providing information beyond their intended use, and that security flaws can't be exploited to access confidential data or systems. HackerOne seamlessly integrates with your existing tools to enhance communication and collaboration across development, security, and IT teams. So, stay ahead of the game in the battle against cyber threats with HackerOne's Attack Resistance Platform. Learn more at HackerOne.com. That's HackerOne. .com, HackerOne.com.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many variables. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Steve, Justin, and Luke. This is Paulo from Gaithersburg. Today I have a question about BioNTech. It actually caught my eye because I heard somewhere that they have like so much cash on their balance sheet. Usually I'm not really a fan of pharma industry. And I know the COVID vaccine is over for them, but they have a lot of products in their pipeline. And what really caught my eye is that they don't have much debt, and they have almost as much cash on their balance sheet as their market cap. So I was asking myself if it's not like an interesting investment for, let's say, the future for the next 5 to 10 years. Interested what you guys think about it, and I'm looking forward to hear about it on the show. And as always, I love to listen to your show, and I'm looking forward to it. Thank you all. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, looking at BioNTech, and this is out of Germany, and they partnered, I believe, with Pfizer, right?
Pfizer.
Yep. You know, they made a bunch of money for the original vaccine, and those profits continue to trail off. Last quarter, revenues down 64%, earnings down 79%. And for this year and next year, they're supposed to return to a loss like they were for pretty much their history before 2020 hit. So that's the issue here. And the uptake in vaccine, the boosters, has done not nearly what people had hoped. And frankly, I'm a person. I took this vaccine, and I have an autoimmune condition because of it. So it's not major, it's minor, but it's still a thing, and you can pay me to take a booster. So I think a lot of people maybe not feel as strongly as I do, but similarly. And so you see that with the Pfizer trend in Pfizer stock, Moderna stock, BioNTech. They're in a downtrend for a reason, because the uptake of the boosters is just not there. Now, the caller's correct. They do have a lot of cash in their balance sheets, somewhere 12, 15 billion. What are you seeing, Luke?
Yeah, around 12, 13 billion.
Yep. On a $21 billion market cap. So that's basically saying, okay, the business is worth roughly $8 or $9 billion there, which for a expected money losing company for next year, that seems pretty expensive to me. I don't know. What are your thoughts, Luke?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they were a one-trick pony. And for the company, the trick seems to be gone now. They're not going to be making the $40 a share that they did 2 years ago. But they do have a lot of cash. So I guess the question for the caller would be, you know, this is probably a better protector of your capital than most biotechs that are just burning through money.
Expected to burn through some money, right?
If you're but a lot of biotechs burn through money by taking on debt and then burning through money. Yeah. If these guys want to burn through their money, at least they have the cash. So I'm never a fan of biotechs generally, right? This is probably not as bad as most of them, because at least they're not in a bunch of debt and they have a bunch of cash to play with. But is this where you should put your capital? I don't think so.
Yeah, and really, as you said, they're one-trick ponies. So you either buy into the mRNA platform or you do not. That's really the question here. If you do, you think that, you know, it has other applications that are going to be fantastic, then this is a good name. But if you don't have faith in that platform, then, you know, you want to avoid this name. All right, let's go to Frank in San Rafael, looking at EVLV. Evolve Technologies, the owner, looking to buy it?
I'm looking to buy it. I just heard some news on one of the programs one time about they got some methods of finding guns on people in New York subways. I was curious about that.
Interesting. Okay. So this is a very small cap company, $737 million market cap. They provide AI-based touchless security screening systems for weapon detection, identity verification, etc. I haven't heard that story, but an interesting one. This company has never made money. You know, I would never buy anything though, just based on one headline I don't know much about. So it sounds like you read a headline. I would really need to dig into it deeper, but certainly not okay, a company that has very good fundamentals.
It's never made any money then. It's never made any money.
Never. Never.
Okay. Well, Steve always said to stay away from those companies, so I think I will. And I wish the best for him, too.
Thank you. Appreciate it. I'll definitely pass that along. Did have a nice spike recently, but yeah, it's a poor business. And I don't know if this becomes the standard in the way to detect weapons, you know, maybe, but that's probably not the case. Right. Now, Luke, let's talk about the Final Four, not the Final Four
let's
this weekend of both, you know, the men's and the women's basketball matchups are pretty intriguing this weekend. That's exciting. But I think for most of our listeners, it is the matchup between Cytokinetics and our friend Core in Maine. Now,
Core in Maine.
Cytokinetics did get through the Final Four by the skin of its teeth. It had actually a down day at $1.74, whereas Core in Maine, it didn't have a great day. It was also down, overbought. So both of them definitely reversed. Which one are you taking? Are you just sticking with Core in Maine?
Core in Maine. There's no fundamental technical reason. It's just my gut. My gut is telling me Core in Maine.
Okay. Yeah. And like you said, you're not a big fan of biotechs typically. Cytokinetics is not a money-making company. It's money-losing. And so I'll go with Core in Maine as well, mainly because if we do start a market pullback and we have, you know, some negatively interpreted jobs numbers tomorrow, certainly Cytokinetics is likely to sell off more than Core in Maine. So I'll go with Core in Maine as well. CNM is the symbol. And then our final matchup in the Final Four is Equitable Holdings, EQH, also down a little bit today. And going up against AES, which was actually up over 1% today, despite the market sell-off. So definitely a flight to safety there with AES. So you have a utility company going up against really an investment company, a financial services company, similar to, you know, our business. I don't know. I'm going to go with AES mainly because if we do have a follow-through tomorrow, those utility companies tend to hold up better because they tend to be bond proxies, right?
I agree. I think that if tomorrow's jobs report comes in at consensus or better than consensus, yep, there will maybe be a little bit of a follow through from the Fed comments, maybe some deterioration on the macroeconomic picture, and the flight to safety trade would definitely benefit the utility. So
yeah,
I'm going to go with the utility here.
Yeah, all depends on how the market reacts tomorrow. Do we get a follow through day? You know, or was today just one day and market freaked out over the similar things that we talked about this to start the show, but or do we get a snapback a continuation to the downside? I think that's certainly a potentiality as well. So we shall see. I will go with AES and Core in Maine as well as my prediction for the final on Monday. Now, Luke, let's talk a little bit about the oil industry and more specifically the refining industry. And this is an interesting recent report from Wood Mackenzie, and they looked at 465 different refining sites around the world, 465, and they identified about 121 of them, about 21.6% of global capacity, that are at the risk of closure. Now, this is the risk of closure, not like they're going to close tomorrow or predicting all of them are going to close. Just saying that the economics of them closing is as elevated. And they see them mainly in Europe and China. And Europe because less cheap inputs from, say, Russian oil and gas. As well as in China, they're electrifying their auto fleet. And so, you know, is that something that could push the demand for liquids in China down and the profit margins and cash flow in Europe and European refineries down? So what did you make of this report?
I think typically with reports such as this, the answer is, again, somewhere in the middle, right? I think people over-anticipated the extent to which electric vehicles and renewable energy would have prominence in the world in 2024. Electric vehicles have not caught on like some people hoped and thought that they would. So do I think that generally oil refineries, some are going to close as oil demand is drawn down? Yes, that doesn't mean that oil demand is going away. It just means that it's being drawn down. So does it make sense going forward that some oil refineries in some of these countries are going to close? It makes sense to me. I don't know if it'll be to this extent or as quickly as some people assume, but it certainly makes sense that that would logically happen.
Yeah, I think my issue with this report is the continued belief that transport fuel demand will decline. And you just see, as the last couple of years, there have been a lot of EVs sold throughout the world, and demand for transport fuels, mainly think oil that you put in your car, diesel that Luke puts in his car. You drive a diesel, right?
I do drive a diesel car, 50 miles to the gallon.
There you go. So, you know, the demand there has been believed to shrink. You know, it's always going to shrink and go negative in the next 3-5 years because of EVs. And then it just doesn't happen. And we've talked recently about the low demand for EVs this year and going forward in the environment where consumers are a bit more stressed. You have interest rates going up, so it's more expensive to finance. And you know, those that have $100,000 to burn, they've kind of bought their EV, and there's not a whole lot of a demand on the lower end. And so I think it's pretty clear that the low-hanging fruit of those that will buy EVs is mainly exhausted. And now it comes down to how do you incentivize people on the lower end of the spectrum to go buy EVs and increase that demand growth on the EV side. And I just don't see it. And so that's why I think the economics for most of these refineries will remain solid and robust, especially because typically they find other uses for some of these fuels, especially if the prices go down. Now, where I do think there will be some shutdowns will be in Europe because the input costs for oil and gas are no longer dirt cheap like they were when they were importing a lot of that from Russia. And so and then you have the economy generally in Europe relatively subdued, slow grower. So I think that's where probably the biggest risk to shutdowns are. You're already seeing European oil refineries shut down, one from Eni, E-N-I, as well as that's an Italian oil company. As well as Shell, they're shutting down one in Germany. So interesting story here that could affect the broader oil industry. Now, 2024 is humming along, and we are now into the second quarter. The first quarter is behind us. Can you believe that?
Wild.
We're over a quarter of the way. Even as a leap year, you know, we had an extra day in that first quarter, and it still went by fast. And, you know, the big question for our listeners, Luke, is are they ready? Are they ready for these times? You're already seeing that now. You're seeing the price of raw commodities, industrials, the old economy in Invest Stock Market Madness vernacular, the old economy stocks, they're doing fantastic. The new economy stocks, not doing so hot as of late. And you're starting to see those trends that started really in 2022 reemerge. And the question is, are you ready for these trends? Is your portfolio prepared? Well, if you need help, please take advantage of our free portfolio review assessment via telephone or go to meeting by heading over to investtalk.com and fill out the portfolio review questionnaire. You can get to it by just clicking on the button on the top right-hand part of the screen. Now, this is Invest Talk with more than 58 million downloads, and our work continues with this caller question.
Yes, my name is Josh here in North Carolina. Love your show. I had a question about a stock, HTGC, Hercules Capital. Purchased some positions of this last month. Just kind of watching it. Don't know if I should hold it or sell it in lieu of what we're seeing going on with some of these commodity prices. And I have a lot of positions in oil and uranium and did not know if I could free up some cash by selling it and moving into those. Would appreciate your opinion. Thank you very much.
All right. Looking at HTGC, Hercules Capital. This is a BDC company. They invest in privately held technology and life science companies. 8.8% dividend yield. And this investor is probably looking at that yield. And my immediate reaction is run, sell, get out. This is already showing some negative divergence on the chart. And anytime you have an 8.8% dividend, that's a red flag. And then my third red flag is privately held tech and life science companies, biotech companies. This is not where you want to be. And I think those harder assets are certainly going to outperform. What are your thoughts, Luke?
Yeah, I will say their dividend's been pretty consistent in the 8 to 11% range over the past 5 years, and the returns did start to diverge at the end of 2019, but it doesn't seem as though that may be the indicator of why you should run for this company. I think the second point you made was, which is it is investing in tech companies.
And they probably
better uses for your capital.
Pretty high multiples in those private markets. So, yeah, you can do much better. You're not going to get the 8.8% dividend, but you're going to get probably much better total return. Thanks for the call. Now we're going to take one final break, and that means you can call us right now at 888-99-CHART.
The goal of achieving financial freedom requires unbiased information, strategic planning, and determination. Congratulations! You've found the podcast that is dedicated to helping you succeed. InvestTalk.
Hey, Justin and Luke. I'm looking to add to my income portfolio and came across Blue Owl Capital Corporation, ticker symbol OBVC. Trading at about $15.40 right now. Seems to push out a nice dividend. And wanted to get your thoughts on the company itself, if it's sustainable, if it's a decent addition to a portfolio that is based on income. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts and love what you guys do. Thanks so much.
All right, well, first, I want you to back up because I think this would teach a lot of people out there is you need to have portfolios that are not just based on income. You need to have a portfolio that is based on good quality companies, good quality businesses, not just income. Income should always 100% of the time be secondary to the underlying business. Now, let's take a look at this one. Blue Owl Capital Corp, OBDC. We had a caller about a BDC company that was focused on tech and biotech, it looked like. This one doesn't seem to have an emphasis, but that also makes you say, I don't really know what they own. They do lend to middle market companies, and that can be of higher risk. But we also know, Luke, as of late, of the past 5-10 years or so, people are chasing yield, and a lot of the lending has gone to non-standard forms of financing, and there tends to be looser underwriting standards. And that allows them to grow their book, to grow their business, but it also increases the overall risk of these portfolios that are ultimately driving this dividend. So do you think he should be as worried as we were about that previous caller?
Well, I think that's something to consider. Certainly, I think the hidden debt within the system is a problem that can blow up in a really bad way, primarily because of those loose standards. We found time and time again that loose lending standards lead to catastrophes. Mm-hmm. I think one thing that strikes me is with this company, their sales growth seems to have stalled a little bit. They had some great growth between 2021 and 2022, but that's kind of tapered off a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's pretty fairly valued. I don't think it's undervalued. I think you tend to want to buy great businesses that are undervalued.
It's hard to know what's, like you said, that's fairly valued, but you don't know what's in the portfolio, right?
True.
So did they lend at egregious valuations? Did they lend to poor businesses? That's the hard part. To me, I look at these as extremely high risk bond funds.
Yeah.
What they are, right? They're think of a high yield bond fund, but to companies that can access the public markets. Most high yield bond funds that you're buying, they're filled with companies that do have maybe poor balance sheets, leveraged balance sheets, but they oftentimes have still access to the capital markets, meaning they can borrow more, they can issue more stock, they can borrow from banks and issue new bonds, etc. Whereas these companies, they're smaller. They're not your little mom and pop. They're in the middle market. You know, they still have millions of dollars in revenue. They have a business there, but the quality of that business is obviously not up to the par to go public. And so, you know, that's the issue here is it looks sexy, but you go back to 08 and you saw a default cycle and a lot of these companies get into trouble and the dividends get cut. So I'm just not a huge fan of these BDCs. I think there's a better risk versus reward by buying a high yield bond fund, which you're not going to get 10%, but you can still get, you know, right now 6.5%, 7%, maybe 7.5%. And you're going to be, I think, much safer in a credit downturn. That makes sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. And I think you also, you know, I think people tend to think of dividends as, oh, we have this money coming in now, and you want to live off of the income from these companies. When, you know, you generally, if you are investing in companies because they're great businesses that might not even pay dividends, you get to kick the tax bill down the road, right? Mm-hmm. A dividend is forcing you to pay taxes, and the share price goes down based upon how much money the company is giving out in a dividend. It's not like you're making free money here. So I think people have to reorient themselves.
Yeah, and if you look at the history of the dividend as of late, basically since near the end of 2022, their dividend has been going up and down from 3 cents to 33 cents, back to 4, back to 33, back to 6, back to 33. So, you know, why aren't they paying that dividend consistently anymore? I think that's a big, big question. So I would definitely pass on Luau. Thanks for the call. I'm Justin Klein with Luke Guerrero, and this completes another InvestTalk program. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to rate on iTunes as well. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.